Imagine more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi there, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 498 of the Recruiting Future podcast. The early careers labour market is evolving. The pandemic severely impacted internships, hybrid working is changing graduate recruitment, and many employers are reviewing their entry requirements to cast a broader net for talent. My guest this week is Dr. Charlie Ball, Head of Labour Market Intelligence at JISC. Charlie is one of the UK's leading experts on graduate employment, with deep insights to share on current market trends that are applicable globally. A must listen for anyone involved with interns, graduates, and college recruiting. Hi, Charlie, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Matt. Nice to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Please, could you just introduce yourself and tell everyone what you do?
Well, I'm Dr. Charlie Ball, and I'm the Head of Labour Market Intelligence at JISC. JISC is the large organisation, not-for-profit organisation within the higher education sector that looks after services and support for students and practice. And it's the digital organisation for the sector. And I'm the labour market expert there.
Tell us a little bit more about what that entails.
Well, essentially, my role is to do a lot of the primary research, or to lead a lot of the primary research that underpins a lot of the practice of the UK's higher education career services. Now, as you know, as some of our many of our listeners know, the higher education system in the UK has a very strong and very well integrated career service system. All institutions have some kind of careers service. They rely on basic information about the graduate labour market in order to be able to operate. And my role is to oversee the production of that basic information that HE Career Services use. And also, to an extent, colleges and essentially anybody else who wants to know about the employment of graduates. And the list of stakeholders there is quite long.
Yeah, absolutely. Including lots of people who are listening right now. Really keen to start to sort of digging into some of the things that you're sort of seeing in 2023 and some of the things that might happen. Before we do, though, it's probably worth just having a little bit of a look into how graduate recruitment and the labour market for it has sort of evolved over the last 2 or 3 years with the pandemic and everything. What trends have we been seeing? What's changed? What was the state of the market going into 2023?
It's a very interesting question, Matt. In order to answer it effectively, I'm going to overjoy your listeners by taking us back to 2020 and the start of the pandemic, because I think we all want to relive that period. And so what first happened is, it was around 3 years ago in the UK, certainly, that it became clear that all was not well. And I remember being at Euston Station in early February 2020, having just delivered a keynote speech at a conference. And it was on the BBC News that a large conference, which had taken place at Earl's Court, which had been attended by a number of MPs, a number of people there had been tested positive for COVID and were being forced to isolate. And it was starting to really strike home with the UK public that this was something that was going to be a bit out of the ordinary. By March 2020 was the first lockdowns for the UK. But what actually happened in practical terms for the labour market was, in about a fortnight, the whole of the UK economy shut down. Well, it didn't shut in physical terms. It didn't shut down entirely. Everybody went to their untested virtual solutions, and we started using conference programmes and homeworking in a big way. And I think the tacit fear was that these systems were not going to hold. And that as a consequence, business will be phenomenally disrupted, and we would see widespread hardship, business failure and unemployment. What actually happened is the systems held, and particularly for professional workers. And now we're going to move into the graduate labour market here. And I acknowledge that many elements of the graduate labour market are very different to other parts of the UK employment experience. And in particular, much of the graduate labour market was well suited to virtual working. So the large numbers of professional workers in IT, in professional services, in office and desk jobs, it turned out that they were able to transition and their businesses were able to transition to virtual working and hybrid working very, very effectively. Far more effectively, it beat out all of the most optimistic case scenarios. So March and April 2020 is when you would start to see budgets being set for things like work experience, or budgets being spent for things like work experience and apprenticeships. So those were hit very badly. Work experience and apprenticeships in particular pretty much vanished from the market overnight. But graduate training schemes, the money had already been spent, and in many cases, the recruitment had already been done for summer 2020. We did hear quite a few stories of offers being rescinded, but by and large, quite a lot of graduate labour market activity for graduates who were leaving in the summer had already started. And as the summer went on, and the furlough scheme, which we must remind ourselves in the UK certainly was very effective, preserved many jobs. At the start of the outset, there were respected labour market economists saying that by autumn 2020, we might be seeing 4 to 5 million people out of work, an absolutely phenomenal number. And the furlough scheme was originally intended to only last until September 2020. And after that, the outlook for particularly for small businesses looked very, very bleak. But of course, in the event, because of that bleak outlook, the furlough scheme was extended. At the outset of the pandemic, the World Health Organization told us it might take 18 months to get a vaccine. In the end, the lead time to a vaccine was substantially shorter. And so by autumn 2020, it was clear that virtual working was more effective than people believed, and productivity was up. In fact, in some cases, worker satisfaction was up. We had a vaccine on the way. And mass unemployment hadn't taken place. And so by autumn 2020, it was starting to become clear, and I was having quite a lot of conversations, starting to become clear that, if anything, many graduate businesses, particularly those that had successfully switched along with their clients to hybrid working, may, if anything, had under-recruited during the pandemic itself, the main parts of the pandemic. We then fast forward to the recruitment season for 2021. Early to late spring. In May 2021 was when all the remaining restrictions were lifted in the UK on movement, and everybody tried to recruit at once. And the recruitment market went absolutely mad. And that's when we started to see all the big headlines in the UK. They've been bubbling under in the trade, and we were already getting really quite concerned in late 2020 and early 2021 about shortages in health, education, social care, IT, engineering. And the other thing that happened is towards the end of the pandemic is we started to get to a situation where we had more vacancies than unemployed people in the UK, and that's now become the status quo. So to cut a long story short, the pandemic did not have the effect on the graduate labour market that I think the large majority of people predicted. It didn't wreck the labour market for graduates. It did cause some problems in terms of ability to access work experience. But those graduates who graduated during the pandemic, actually, we've now got the data for their first destinations 15 months after graduating. The graduates who graduated during the pandemic actually saw very little, or seem to have seen very little, short to medium term scarring of their labour market prospects. And the main effect has been that now, and this is still very, very profound, that now still 80% of the IT workforce, 70% of the professional services workforce is now working in a hybrid way, have been working in a hybrid way for 3 years now. We can assume that's embedded. And that has been the main change for graduates of the pandemic. The fact that hybrid working is now the business model for large parts of the jobs market, large parts of the professional jobs market, many, possibly most, difficult to put an exact figure on it, but it's certainly a large proportion of graduates will now work in a hybrid way in the future. And most people who are working in a hybrid way in the UK at least have degrees. And I think that is an underappreciated distinction. Hybrid working is basically for graduates.
Before we sort of move forward into 2023, just I suppose a couple of things to kind of ask you about that. Firstly, obviously the lack of people getting work experience and internships, back in 2020, 2021. Do you think that will have a material effect down the line?
I think the whole work experience training question is a really, really interesting one. Because if you're a company that's now working on a hybrid model, delivering training, delivering work experience and apprenticeships, particularly accredited ones, and particularly ones that require an assessment, it's now a different challenge. And I think it's one that business doesn't yet feel it's completely met. So we have this situation where businesses have not brought back work experience to quite the extent, because particularly, if you're offering an apprenticeship, that's got an accredited portion at the end. In order to do that, you need people in the office all the time, and you need someone to assess the work that your apprentice is doing. And there are challenges to that that I think industry has not come to a consensus on how to meet. That's very interesting from my point of view as a specialist in employment. And I do think there is a great prize to be won by any organisations, sectors or individuals who solve those problems to industry's satisfaction, because to be candid, I think there are new business models emerging in delivering and assessing training and work experience, and even basic functions like HR, because of course your average HR, particularly your standard HR models, do assume essentially, if you've got an employee who's struggling at work, for example, your colleagues will notice that, and you can have a quiet word is the first process. But in a virtual environment, that's very different, and that's why some of the issues to do with well-being and mental health have started to come up. And I think there are a lot of implications in those lines that have yet to be worked out. So the work experience model and the way that work experience is delivered is still, I think, we're still going to be, as a society, and particularly in terms of the way that we look at work, the expectations for people to have certain kinds of work experience, I think it'll take a few years before that settles down.
A quick message from our sponsor, Wonolo. Hi everyone, I want to tell you about Wonolo. That's Wonolo. Wonolo stands for Work Now Locally. Wonolo enables businesses to find quality workers for on-demand, seasonal, short-term and long-term work. Ditch the bulky paperwork and interview process and use Wonolo to find quality workers fast and get work done even faster. With flexible workers and no platform fees, you can save on operating costs, meet demand and maximise earnings with ease. Wonolo is available in over 100 markets, including Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, New York, and Seattle. Get workers who are ready to work and spend less time finding them with Wonolo. Go to www.wonolo.com/pod. That's www.wonolo.com/pod and take the stress out of finding workers. If graduate work is mostly becoming hybrid or perhaps even remote, what effect does that have on kind of location mobility in terms of where people, where people work?
And this is, from my point of view, from my own research interests, you're right, this is a particular interest to me. I've worked for a long time on questions of less developed areas, remote, peripheral, rural locations, and the way that you furnish a professional job market, or the way that graduates move around between locations. And hybrid working throws an entirely new factor into the mix, because of course you may be, your work or your business may be based in one location, but you might be in another. My optimistic hope is that this will democratize to an extent some of those some of those questions. So, for example, in the UK and in many parts of the developed world, you know, this is an issue, particularly in the US, with its wide geographies and large amounts of rural location. You have this flight of skilled workers away from smaller towns and rural areas to the cities where the jobs are, and they take their spending power with them, they take their economic and social power with them. But now if you're, say, a worker from rural North Yorkshire, you may no longer need to relocate to Leeds or London in order to pursue your career. You may be able to base yourself in, you may be able to continue to be based in a location that's got a lower cost of living or has lifestyle features that you like, and then continue to work and get roles that were previously concentrated in the cities. And that's my optimistic reading of the situation, and that we may see, for example, changes in, we may see younger people more easily able to access the housing market because they will be able to get decent jobs and be based in parts of the world that are cheaper to live in, less fashionable, more remote. My worry is, however, that it will also fuel house price inflation in places like coastal areas, where, you know, everybody all wants to work at the beach or in the hills or in the countryside. So there is a danger that it may also accelerate hollowing out of less fashionable urban areas. And I think fundamentally it remains to be seen how this will work. But I do think that I'm basically going to have to start again on a lot of the work that I've done, because I'm not sure I'm one of those people who's done 20 years of work on a particular topic and found the pandemic has thrown that all up into the air. Personally, yeah. I quite relish that. I enjoy doing that work and I don't mind doing it again. But I appreciate some of the old ways of thinking about the link between person, place and employment may not hold for many workers. I mean, obviously, if you're a nurse, you're still going to go work in hospital. But if you're an IT worker, the whole of the UK and indeed international is theoretically open to you. And that will change things in ways that we can't foresee yet.
I suppose moving on to the current sort of state of the economy in 2023, I was reading through the predictions you were making about the market for the next 12 months. And one of the things that you say is that we're not going to see the type of graduate labour market that we normally get in a recession. Can you explain what you mean by that and what you're seeing happening?
Well, I mean, normally you will see the graduate labour market suffer during a recession. It's worth stressing that the labour market for graduates always suffers the least of all the labour markets. That's the first thing. Most qualified. There isn't a situation, despite some popular discourse, about, you know, people being overqualified for jobs. There isn't a situation where people with better qualifications and credentials fare worse than people without them. But in general, what you would ordinarily see in a recession, by this point in a recession, is you would have seen in advance of the recession happening, because recessions are rarely a surprise. They rarely come by surprise, and they're rare, particularly to recruiting businesses. So you'd have seen a drop off in business confidence for about 12 to 18 months before the recession happened, reduced investment, which includes hiring. It's more usually on things like R&D and equipment and plant and location spend, but it'll also be on hiring. And you'd already started to see a gentle drop off in employment for graduates, which would then, as the recession kicked in, be then followed by a sharp drop off, and particularly in areas that are reliant on large upfront spend. So you would see, for example, the engineers usually start to see a downturn in their normally excellent graduate prospects early, because they often, you know, you have your engineering project needs quite a lot of upfront overhead to kick in. So a very good two very good canaries in the coal mine, if you like, for the graduate labour market is, the first thing is the IT contractor market. So you look at IT recruitment firms, And when they start to report significantly reduced billing and reduced placements, that's usually a sign that difficult labour market times are on the way. And the other thing is you look at engineers, and particularly civil engineers, and when they start to get laid off in large numbers or their prospects start to diminish, that's a sign that the construction and infrastructure market is going to take a bath. And that's usually a key leading indicator of a labour market recession. Neither of those things have happened this time. So this is, or have happened so far, I should say. So what's recession? We likely have a recession. We're likely in a recession or have one coming. But it's not behaving in the ways that you would normally associate with a normal graduate labour market. So at present, the graduate jobs market is defying gravity a little bit.
One of the other things that we've been seeing, you know, over the last few years, but it seems to be coming more of a trend, is employers dropping their entry requirements, you know, either dropping the need to have a degree completely or lowering, the class of degree that they're looking for. What's driving this? And do you think that it's a long-term trend?
I do think it's a long-term trend. What's driving it is simple, a candidate availability, or rather the increasing concern from recruiters, from hiring managers, that are missing talented people, which of course they have been. There's the realisation that degree grade is linked to other factors than sheer ability. Certain demographic groups are more likely, notwithstanding any other factors, to get 2-1s. And they're all the people who experience advantage in the first place, and all the people who are generally overrepresented in professional firms anyhow. And the other factor is, to be honest, most graduates get 2-1s, so filtering for them is sometimes more effort than it's worth. You don't actually filter out that many people, and some of those people you filter out might have other qualities that will be valuable to your business and which your business is underrepresented in. So, you know, people who've done a lot of extracurricular work, people who have done a lot of actual employment, and people from non-traditional backgrounds are all more likely to get, we're all more likely to get 2-2s, but they all bring something useful to businesses. So I do think this is a trend. But of course, it wouldn't be so much of a trend if we didn't have widespread candidate shortage in a lot of areas. So fundamentally, that's what's driving it. We don't have enough candidates for tech roles. We don't have enough candidates in large parts of education, health and social care. We don't have enough candidates in large parts of professional services. And so fundamentally, hiring managers do want to broaden out their talent pool with the least possible risk to quality, and dropping the 2-1 requirement seems to be an effective way of doing that.
There are lots of very disruptive things happening here. We've got hybrid working affecting the geographical mobility. We've got demand holding up in a recession, and the third thing that we were talking about was obviously people reevaluating their kind of entry requirements for these roles. So lots of very disruptive things. Now, as we know from the last few years, it's impossible to predict the future, but I'd love to get your view on where you think we're going in terms of, you know, early careers and graduate recruitment and what things might look like in, say, 5 years' time.
I think that's a very good question. And so I will preface that is I am an expert in this area, and much of what I say when I predict the future will be wrong. However, I don't think it will be very wrong. So you can, your listeners can take that as they see fit. But my definition of an expert is somebody who will admit that they don't know. So, you know, we can't be entirely sure. My experiences of working in this area is actually things change a little less than generally, as long as we don't have a worldwide pandemic that forces everybody to go virtual within a month, things generally change less and a slower pace than expected. So if I'll be honest, I'd say that a hiring manager who managed to get a wormhole to early careers hiring in 5 years' time would probably see much of that, most of it they would recognise, and most of the landscape would be familiar to them. I don't think it would change out of all recognition. But I think where the biggest changes will be innovations that make use of rather than work around this hybrid paradigm. So we'll see innovations, we'll see further innovations in recruitment and hiring that make use of the ability to leverage hybrid technology and hybrid working. We'll see, as I say, things like training, work experience, apprenticeships, and general HR and employee support are issues in search of a solution. I think in 5 years' time, industries will have settled around the consensus on the best way to address those particular topics. And it will be, I don't think they will be very different to what we have now, but I think they will be different, and we'll see innovation within the early career space being driven to some extent by those particular topics, because that's where innovation is needed. And we'll see much clearer thinking of the effects of hybrid working on things like geographic mobility and also things like office use. I mean, the question of hybrid working is now bound up in people physically using space, and that will, and how that affects urban and local landscapes. We know a lot of businesses are divesting themselves of office space and office portfolio, and what effect that will have. And in 5 years' time, we'll have a clearer view. We'll start to have a clearer view of some of the implications, longer term implications of the effects of the pandemic. Because, you know, the pandemic itself might be effectively over in terms of its large scale effect on individuals. Now we've got a vaccine and things are more under control, but the long term effects of the things that we did will play out over the long term, and things will happen. There will be unforeseen events and consequences that we've still to chart, and it will be interesting to see how we deal with them. But the one lesson we've learned from COVID, I think, as hirers and as businesses, we can and will cope with it.
Absolutely. Charlie, thank you very much for talking to me.
A pleasure, Matt. Thank you very much.
My thanks to Charlie. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter, Recruiting Future Feast, and get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.